Michael O'Regan's Call from the Dáil on Kerry Today.
Now, Michael, a horrible reminder of the reason why Northern Ireland and the political process and the peace process that's there is so important. The pictures on the front page of the newspapers this morning tell their own tale in relation to, I suppose, the PSNI officer, the detective chief inspector, who was shot in front of his own child on a soccer field in Omagh. A terrible reminder, and will it give impetus, I suppose, to the politicians there to continue on the road that they have started on in the last couple of weeks, in fairness, and get a deal done to get back working in Stormont?
Yes, sir, and it shows just how fragile the Good Friday Agreement is, 25 years on. A shocking, truly evil act. You know, a man out doing some good community work, organising soccer, his son with him, and he's pumped with bullets. It is shocking. And it does put a greater pressure on the politicians. Whether all of them will see the horror of this, it's hard to know. At the moment, it looks a bit deadlocked. Now, we've yet to see the full terms of what has been agreed between the UK and the EU, and, of course, critically, the attitude of the DUP. But there's a growing feeling, Gerry, among observers of what's going on in the North. And I heard Alistair Campbell say it, actually, the other night. He spoke at a very, very interesting launch of a series of interviews Bertie Ahern has done on the 25th anniversary. Clinton, Blair, they're all in there, all the Irish involvement as well. And it was launched in the Shelburne. And Alistair Campbell, who happened to be was there, and he spoke. He also gave an interview to Pat Kelly the following morning. And Blair, Campbell has said that Sunak should go for it. Face down the Eurosceptics in a party that's, look, he's nothing to lose. The party's already fractured, will probably be annihilated at the next election, although Campbell has reservations about predicting that at the moment. He also, of course, in the House of Commons, will have the support of the Labour Party to get whatever measure he introduced through. Now, it might actually boost Sunak's standing. If you look at Sunak, he's head and shoulders above his two predecessors. One was an idiot and a spoofer, and the other woman, the other person, Liz Truss, just wasn't in it. So he has a chance to kind of make a name for himself, so to speak, on this. But much will depend on the DUP. What could happen, of course, is that the DUP could be left behind in all of this. I must say, Gerry, observing matters during the week and following this pretty closely, it's very hard not to conclude that part of the problem with among some in the DUP is having a Sinn Féin First Minister.
Yeah, well, doesn't it boil down on both sides of the Irish Sea to domestic political problems separate from the peace process itself? That issue for the DUP of playing second fiddle between First Minister and Second First Minister, even though it is a cooperative approach because of the unique nature of the arrangement there. And in London, you have Sunak with this problem. And the problem is, and we had Boris Johnson's comments during the week, Suella Braverman talking about as well, no, we need to keep this legislation in reserve to force the EU to do what we want. That's less about Northern Ireland and more about threats to his leadership, isn't it? Boris wants back in, he'll do something to destabilise Sunak. Suella Braverman as well is not going to toe the line. Liz Truss getting involved as well. That it's domestic political considerations that are putting pressure on, both within the DUP and the Tory party. And the danger is that the North might be sacrificed on either of those altars.
Precisely. And it's quite appalling that Johnson's prepared to put his own personal ambition, which I don't think will be achieved, but there he are. He still has a measure of support within the Conservative Party.
You can't count him out, and Michael. He's come from the dead before. I mean, politically, as cynical as you might feel it is, he's very savvy.
He's very savvy, and a lot of people observing him over the years, when he was a kind of joke figure, never thought he'd be Prime Minister, and he was. He confounded his critics, and he could do it again. I agree. But
the danger is the North gets sacrificed in the meantime.
Precisely. And, you know, you have bullets being pumped into a member of the PSNI. So that's the danger. And looking back over the 25 years, and I've been listening to some of those podcasts which Ahern has made, and with News Talk, and they're very well done, actually. They're very interesting, and you it was a bit of a miracle that we ever had a Good Friday Agreement. When you think about the lead-up to what was happening, and indeed the critical days before it was achieved, I think we were very lucky that Blair was in power in the UK, and particularly lucky that Clinton was in power in the United States and stayed up all night in the Oval Office to keep in touch with the talks. And as Ahern said the other night, you know, the leader of the free world staying up all night is a huge contributing factor to success. But it's all very fragile. And we all recall, Gerry, that, you know, the mornings you'd wake up in the past and you'd turn on the news bulletins, more death in the north, more destruction, more misery for people, and nobody wants to go back to that. But it's all hanging on a knife edge at the moment. I'm not saying that it's going to go back to what it was, but there are danger signals that an ongoing stalemate could maybe open a way for paramilitaries.
Yeah, it is possible, and it is very worrying. Now, speaking on our own domestic political side of things, Michael, opinion poll out in the Irish Times, a number of them this week, 35% holding steady, well ahead Sinn Féin, a drop for Fine Gael down to 18, Fine Gael holding steady at 24%. The party leader's popularity is an interesting one as well. First, what do you make of the overall state of the party? Sinn Féin maintaining 35%, well ahead of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil.
That's right, yeah. I mean, Sinn Féin holding strong. A bit of a dip for Fianna Fáil after Micheál Martin stood down as Taoiseach. And it shows, of course, that that, you know, having a Taoiseach does give a certain cachet to a political party. And when Martin stood down as Taoiseach, then, you know, Fianna Fáil takes a dip. The interesting thing about it, though, Gerry, is as you look at it at the moment, Sinn Féin is heading for government. Who would they head? And this, by the way, that is today. Things can change. Things can change even during a general election campaign. But who are they going to power with? And you look at the current figures, you're looking probably at a Sinn Féin Fianna Fáil government, if that's possible. The other interesting aspect of that poll in the Irish Times was the satisfaction ratings with the party leaders. And Micheál Martin is the most popular leader at 45%. Mary Lou MacDonald, leading the most popular party, is at 42%. So there's Micheál Martin, 45%, Mary Lou, 42%, Leo Varadkar, 43%, Eamon Ryan, 22%. Now, this is going to put the focus on Micheál Martin's position. A lot of speculation about whether he'll lead the party into the next election. He could argue, look, I'm the most popular leader, so there's no obvious alternative to him. But it is quite intriguing that he remains the most popular leader, you know, ahead of the leader of the most popular party. That tended not to be the case.
Yeah, yeah, it certainly didn't. And it's an interesting one on that in terms of who might take over Fianna Fáil when Micheál Martin decides whether he wants to go or whether he doesn't. Speaking of leadership, Michael, who's going to lead the Social Democrats? Surprise announcement this week. The co-leaders, yes, Catherine Murphy and Roisin Shortall, stepping down.
This came totally out of the blue, Gerry. That text message the other day to say they were making an important announcement later in the day. There was no pressure on them to go, and they did it well. I wasn't at the press conference, but I happened to run into Roisin Shortall the other night after her. She was out with her family in Dublin, the hotel near Leinster House, and I've never met a more relaxed politician and a person as happy with her decision. And so it's now open to leadership. I would say the dual leadership is gone. The next there'll be a leader. I don't think it ever really worked. I think it took from the party in that you do need the focus on a leader, and it gives, I think, a better image to the party. The betting is on Holly Kearns from Cork South West, but you have Cian O'Callaghan and Jennifer Whitmore who are perhaps might run. Nomination.
Is it important that they have a contest, Michael? Even they have so few TDs comparatively, is it important that they have a contest, or does it matter? Is it more important to have an effective, popular, high visibility leader, I suppose?
I think a contest looks better, Gerry. You know, I think a contest would look better, actually. It would show probably a greater diversity within the party and all that. Now, Cian O'Callaghan and Jennifer Whitmore are equally able. Holly Cairns is rural TD. She would appeal probably to rural and urban voters. Nominations open today. They close at 12 on Wednesday, March the 1st. And then the polls will be will then close at the end of March. If you're a member for over 6 months prior to the calling of the election, you have a vote. The interesting thing about the Soc Dems, though, is how reliant they were on transfers at the last election and how potentially vulnerable those seats are. Take Holly Cairns alone, Gerry. She got a massive transfer from the Sinn Féin candidate Paul Hayes at the last election, which put her over the line and got her a seat. Over 3,000 of a transfer. So next time, in all the constituencies where the Soc Dems have TDs, Sinn Féin will be looking for a seat or an extra seat. So they will be up against it. So who they choose is very important. But right now, the betting is on Holly Cairns.
Well, the question is, Michael, it can get kind of cynical here. If you're a leader of a party, you have a much better chance of being returned to office the next time around. And I suppose the wider question for the Soc Dems is, have they done enough to win over those votes as first preference votes since 2020?
That's it. That's the question. And you do, of course, have a much better chance of retaining your seat because of the profile of the party leader. And but have the Soc Dems consolidated themselves? This is the thing. I think the fact that they had two leaders, although undoubtedly capable, I think it created confusion among voters in the Dáil.
Yeah, indeed. Michael, we'll talk a bit more about this and a few other things to talk to as well, including the future of Kerry as a constituency. We'll get to that and more after we take these.
Michael O'Regan's Call from the Dáil on Kerry Today.
Now, Michael, a comment in from a listener. We're all intelligent people, Michael. We can read up on the North ourselves. We all know it's the European Court of Justice are the problem in Northern Ireland. There's no need for Michael to keep bad-mouthing Boris Johnson. Boris knows the EU cannot have a say in making laws in a UK jurisdiction.
Well, I'm glad to see Boris Johnson as a fan, George. But look, the European Court, the role of the European Court of Justice is a critical factor in all of this and has to be dealt with. But the point about it is, if you do retain some kind of economic link with the EU, then you have to say you pay a certain price, or you meet up. Rather than paying a certain price, you meet a certain level of responsibility in all of this. So yeah. It's not as clear as saying, forget about the European Court of Justice and all of this.
Michael, can I ask you separately, look, we're looking ahead to the Electoral Commission and the boundary review, the constituency review that it's carrying out in a couple of months' time, and it'll factor in hugely to who runs where, who does what in this particular county. And there's been a question about Kerry and the 1 to 30,000 in terms of the constituency or the constitutionally allowed, you have to have one TD for every 30,000 people of population. But there's a bigger question here in the question of whether Kerry will stay a five-seater, one-county constituency or whether it will go back to 2-3-seat constituencies. And on the population side of things, the argument would seem to be that there are other constituencies that are worse off in terms of not having enough TDs per person. So they would take precedence and Kerry would stay as it is. However, the terms of reference of the constituency review have a provision in them that there should be regard to geographic considerations, including significant physical features and the extent of and the density of population in each constituency. Now, that would go, and there's some talk about this in political circles in Kerry as if this would have an impact, which would mean if you look at Kerry, 5 TDs covering a huge expanse of territory, they already have to travel to Dublin to represent their constituents, and then they have to come back to Kerry. They could have a meeting in Tarbert one night and be expected down in Lorrach or in Kenmare a day later, and then back up to Dingle in Ballydavid for something else and have a clinic then in Killarney if they're to do their job properly. That's going to be an interesting consideration for the Commission when it comes to deciding who gets what TDs.
It could, and it could be quite influential. Same, of course, would apply to Mayo and Donegal, other constituencies apart from Kerry. And
yeah. Like, no, if you look at Meath East or Kildare South and the job the TDs, or Dublin Bay South, and the distance the TDs have to travel there, there's no comparison with the miles a Kerry TD has to do.
That's right. I mean, theoretically, Gerry, my local TDs here in Dublin could, you know, they're ministers, so they have cars and drivers. Very posh, Gerry. But theoretically, they could hop on the loose or a bus, and they'd be into Leinster House and, you know, relatively quickly. Now, contrast that with a Kerry TD or a Mayo TD or Donegal TD, and I think it is a factor that will be taken into account, and also, of course, the figures. It's going to be very interesting to see the outcome of that. By the way, Gerry, that Irish Times poll we referred to there earlier, 28% of voters are undecided at the moment, which would suggest that with the revision of the constituencies coming in the summer, 28%, more than a quarter of the electorate undecided, we could be into a very, very volatile political situation. But we won't really have clarity until we know the revision of the constituencies, yeah, including, of course, does Kerry remain a five-seater?
Yeah, you mentioned that. We mentioned the long hours that TDs have to travel. One would hope, Michael, that they're not being powered on that journey by illegal substances. What's this I'm hearing about drugs in Leinster House this week?
Yes, Gerry. apparently, according to Desi Ellis, there are TDs using drugs in Leinster House. Now, the only person this week who admitted to using cannabis in her 20s, long before she was elected at all, was Hildegard Nocton. She said it didn't work for her. I have to say this, Gerry. I can tell you emphatically, there is one drug that is rampant in Leinster House. It's called power. It's about getting...
highly intoxicating and highly addictive, Michael.
Intoxicating, addictive, Gerry, does produce a massive high if you get into power. You get a state car and a driver if you're a senior minister. You get extensive foreign travel, particularly around St. Patrick's Day. And, that's the ultimate high. And to achieve, that drug means, Gerry, that at election time, over a three-week period, political parties traverse the country promising this, that, and the other thing to voters. Now, they're not lying to voters, Gerry. They're just on this drug called, or how you get off it, I'm not too sure. If there's any of our listeners this morning have any medical solution to this drug, which is rampant in Leinster House, we'll all want to hear about it.
We certainly will. Michael, we'll leave it there. My thanks to you for talking to us in the programme this morning. It's Michael O'Regan with Call from the Dáil. If you have a view on what he had to say, get in touch with us on the programme.